Welcome to Nowercast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and with me today is my co-host.
Hey, everyone.
You know, it's fascinating how quickly the narrative around artificial intelligence pricing has shifted. We've gone from frontier models being prohibitively expensive to run at scale to companies essentially giving away top-tier reasoning capabilities if you agree to their terms.
Right. The race to the bottom on API costs is accelerating, and we're seeing some aggressive new pricing tiers that force developers to make hard choices about data privacy.
Which is exactly what Meta is doing this week with a major new model release. We are also going to look at some hard numbers on electric vehicle battery degradation that frankly defy a lot of the conventional wisdom out there. Plus, we have CATL making a massive sodium ion push in South America that could rewrite how we handle grid-scale storage. Meta just released MuseSpark 1.3 on September 2nd. Mark Zuckerberg is calling this their biggest leap in coding and agentic workflows yet, and the specs they published are clearly aimed directly at OpenAI's GPT-5 and Anthropic's Claude Opus 5.
The raw capabilities look impressive. You get a 1 million token context window and native multimodal support covering text, images, and video. But the thing everyone is talking about isn't just the context length, it's the pricing structure.
Standard API pricing is set at $1.25 per million input tokens and $4.25 per million output tokens. That's competitive. But they introduced a separate contributor tier that drops the price to 10 cents for input and 20 cents for output.
10 cents? That is almost too cheap to meter for a model in this class. But the catch is substantial. To get that rate, you have to allow Meta to use your data for training future models.
Right. If you are an enterprise dealing with proprietary code bases, financial data, or healthcare records, the contributor tier is a non-starter. You are paying the $125. But if you are an indie developer or a startup scraping public data to build a consumer tool, 10 cents a million tokens completely changes your unit economics.
It forces a very specific calculation. Is your prompt history your competitive advantage? For a lot of agentic workflows, where the model is just churning through thousands of internal reasoning steps to solve a bug, maybe you don't care if Meta trains on that.
Speaking of reasoning steps, there is a major caveat in Meta's announcement that we need to highlight. The benchmark scores they are heavily promoting rely on a maximum reasoning configuration, but that specific max reasoning tier is not actually available to developers yet.
Wait, they published the benchmarks but held back the model?
They held back the highest effort configuration of it. Meta says it is still undergoing safety testing. So the version of MuSpark 1.3 you can hit via the API today will not reproduce the peak coding scores they showed off in the press release.
That is a frustrating trend. We see this across the industry where the marketing numbers represent an unconstrained version of the model, but the production endpoint is heavily quantized or capped for safety and latency.
It makes it difficult to evaluate how much of the performance leap over MuseSpark 1.2 is due to actual architectural improvements versus just letting the model burn more compute on test time reasoning.
Exactly. If you give an agent 10 times as long to think before it outputs a final answer, it will score higher on coding benchmarks. But until that max reasoning tier clears safety testing and hits the public API, developers are left guessing how it actually performs in a real-world, latency-sensitive environment.
Let's shift gears to electric vehicles. There is a very common fear among prospective EV buyers that car batteries degrade the same way smartphone batteries do.
It is the number one question I hear. People assume that after 3 or 4 years, their car is only going to hold a 60% charge, and they will be hit with a $20,000 bill to replace the pack.
Auto Express just highlighted new 2026 data, showing that fear is largely unfounded. Studies are finding that modern EV batteries generally lose only 1 to 2% of their capacity each year.
And the replacement rates are incredibly low. Recurrent tracks a big community data set of real-world vehicles, and they found that for EVs built from 2022 onward, the battery replacement rate is roughly 0.3%.
That drops to 0.3% once you exclude specific manufacturer recalls. So if your car wasn't part of a known defect batch, the odds of needing a new battery are virtually zero.
The reason for this disconnect between phones and cars comes down to thermal management. Your phone gets hot when it charges, and it just sits there, baking in its own heat. An electric vehicle actively pumps liquid coolant through the battery pack to keep the cells at an optimal temperature.
Plus, modern battery management systems never let you actually use the extreme top and bottom ends of the battery's true capacity. When your dashboard says 100%, the battery might physically only be at 90%. That buffer prevents the kind of deep cycling that destroys lithium-ion cells.
We are also seeing a shift in chemistries. A lot of newer, entry-level EVs are using LFP, or lithium iron phosphate cells, instead of NMC, which is nickel manganese cobalt. LFP batteries degrade even slower and actually tolerate being charged to 100% daily without issue.
These numbers are critical for the secondhand market. Right now, a lack of confidence is depressing used EV values. Buyers just don't trust the battery.
Which is why we desperately need standardized battery health certificates. If you buy a used combustion engine car, you can get a mechanic to do a compression test on the cylinders. If you buy a used EV, you should be able to plug into the OBD port and print out a certified, cryptographic proof of the exact battery degradation percentage.
Some startups are trying to provide that, but until it is a regulatory standard, buyers have to rely on broader statistical data, like this recurrent study. And the statistics are saying the batteries are outlasting the chassis. Sticking with batteries, but scaling up to the grid level, CATL is celebrating the first anniversary of its Chilean offices, and the scale of their footprint there is staggering.
They already have 1.2 gigawatt hours of storage in operation in Chile, another 1.1 gigawatt hours under construction, and 1.3 gigawatt hours currently being dispatched. On top of that, they are preparing an additional 2.3 gigawatt hours.
Chile is experiencing a large boom in utility-scale battery energy storage. The country generates a huge amount of solar power in the Atacama Desert, but they face severe curtailment issues. They generate power during the day, when demand is low, and without transmission lines to move it south, they have to throw that energy away.
So you build giant batteries next to the solar farms to shift that energy to the evening. Historically, that has meant lithium-ion. But CATL's CEO in Chile, Stryver Liu, just announced they are eyeing mid-2027 to dispatch their first sodium-ion batteries in the country.
They launched their Tenor sodium energy storage system globally in Munich earlier this year, targeting that exact mid-2027 delivery window. This is a sizable shift away from lithium dependency.
Sodium is vastly more abundant than lithium, which makes it cheaper and insulates companies from volatile mining supply chains. The trade-off is that sodium-ion batteries are heavier and less energy-dense.
Which is why you don't put them in a sports car. But if you are building a stationary storage facility in the desert, weight simply doesn't matter. You just pour a bigger concrete pad.
Exactly. Sodium-ion also excels in extreme temperatures and is inherently safer regarding thermal runaway. For utility-scale storage, it is the perfect chemistry. The fact that CANADL is ready to start deploying this commercially in Latin America by 2027 shows how fast this technology has matured.
It will be fascinating to see how this impacts global lithium demand. If grid storage transitions entirely to sodium and iron-based chemistries, it frees up a big amount of lithium supply strictly for the electric vehicle and consumer electronics markets.
For those working in the energy transition space, a quick heads up that the Battery Show North America is returning to Huntington Place in Detroit from October 12th through the 15th.
It's the largest event of its kind in the region. They are expecting over 16,000 attendees and 1,300 exhibitors, covering everything from advanced pack design to recycling compliance.
With all the shifting regulations and supply chain volatility right now, the conference programming is going to be a critical barometer for where domestic manufacturing is actually heading. Also in battery news, the University of Washington just opened the West Coast's first public open-access battery manufacturing lab to help startups scale novel chemistries.
They used a $7.5 million grant from the state's Climate Commitment Act to build a 1,600-square-foot expansion. It focuses entirely on prototyping commercially relevant pouch cells.
The key here is that industry users retain all their intellectual property. It bridges that valley of death where startups have a great lab-scale chemistry but can't afford the pilot equipment to prove it works in a real battery format. The open-source audio editor Audacity has released version 4.0, and it is a large architectural overhaul. They have finally shifted the user interface to Qt6.
That brings native high DPI scaling and dark mode, which is great. But they also transitioned to a new .AUP4 project format that converts older files one way.
And because it's such a heavy rewrite, several legacy features, like MIDI tracks, the macro manager, and time tracks, are temporarily missing. So power users might want to keep their old installation around for a bit longer. If you rely on a third-level .name domain, you might be in trouble. ICANN has approved a proposal from VeriSign to completely eliminate all third-level .name domains to simplify administration.
Software engineer Neil Frazier posted about this. He registered his domain almost 25 years ago and uses it for his primary email and API services. Even though it's paid up well into the future, it is scheduled to be destroyed.
It is a harsh reminder of the systemic risks of relying on centralized registries. Your personal infrastructure can just evaporate because an administrator decided a namespace was too complex to maintain. Finally, Anthropic is proposing a major update to Claude Code via a new GitHub issue. They want to introduce function hooks to make plugins significantly more powerful.
The proposal allows developers to hook into the CLI using TypeScript functions, using a continuation model similar to Express or Koa. It lets you modify the environment deeply while tracking side effects safely.
They are actively asking for community feedback on the internal proposal right now. So if you build custom tooling around Claude Code, you should definitely weigh in on the repository. That is all for today's briefing. Thanks for listening.
We will be back tomorrow with more updates. Take care.